This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We've got some great harmonies to get you in the mood for Thanksgiving. My guests are the members of the Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band, and they're going to perform for us. Rowan is considered one of the top bluegrass singer-songwriters of his generation. He got his start with the father of bluegrass, Bill Monroe. Rowan was the lead singer and guitarist for Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys from 1964 to 67. When he left the band, he entered the music counterculture. He and David Grisman co-founded the group Earth Opera, which played the big rock clubs. In 1973, they teamed up with Jerry Garcia and co-founded the progressive bluegrass band Olden in the Way, which included Vassar Clements on fiddle. The Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band's new album, Legacy, features traditional and original compositions. We'll hear Peter Rowan on guitar and vocals, Jody Stecker mandolin, Keith Little banjo, and Paul Knight bass. They all join in on the harmonies. Peter Rowan, Keith Little, Paul Knight, Jody Stecker, welcome to Fresh Air. And I'd love for you to start by performing a song. And by the way, thank you for bringing your instruments. I'd like you to start by performing a song that's on the new CD. And Peter, I think this shows how you're making bluegrass your own. It sounds like a bluegrass song, but at the end there's what I think is a Buddhist chant. So why don't you play the song, and then you can explain to us what's happening at the end and why it's there. So this is a song called Across the Rolling Hills from Peter Rowan's new album, Legacy.
Across the rolling hills I come riding. Across the rolling hills I come riding. Across the rolling hills I ramble where I will. Across the rolling hills I come riding.
Oh, that sounds great. And that's the Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band performing a song that's on their new CD, Legacy. But they're performing for us in the studio. So that's Peter Rowan on guitar and lead vocals, Keith Little banjo, Paul Knight bass, Jody Stecker mandolin, and I guess everybody singing harmonies. So, Peter, tell us the story about writing this song, which sounds to me like it ends with a Buddhist chant. Is that right? And if so, what's the story behind all of this, and what's the Buddhist chant doing at the end?
The song is about the great yogi saint who came from India, Padmasambhava, the great Guru Rinpoche, who brought Buddhism up to Tibet from northern India, where it originated. And it's also about the spirit of Padmasambhava riding across the rolling hills of America and the world and bringing the message of the Buddha to all the sentient beings.
So are you a practicing Buddhist? Did you study Buddhism?
Yeah, I do. I am a practicing Buddhist.
So you sing so many hymn-like songs, and certainly when you were with Bill Monroe, you sang so many, you know, spirituals and hymns. Were you brought up Christian, and do those songs have a lot of resonance for you?
Well, I was brought up Christian, and I liked the music more than I thought about the theology. But, you know, Christian hymns of a certain type, especially of the type that were used in bluegrass, are not only Christian in quotes, they are also a kind of a universal music. There was a composer who wrote a lot of secular gospel tunes, somebody named Stamps Baxter. And bluegrass picked up on those tunes, and they've always been part of the repertoire. And for myself, I just feel that there's a universal language that I'm reaching for.
I want to play a song from your CD, Legacy, and this is called God's Own Child. Peter, can you just say something about the harmonies on this?
Well, the harmonies on God's Own Child are of really old-school style of gospel singing. It's a style I learned from Bill Monroe, who called it holiness singing. And it was a style taught by itinerant preachers and choir instructors who came up through Kentucky and the Carolinas and Virginia back before the turn of the 20th century. And it just seems so appropriate to me to what the song says, and the harmonies weave in the richness. And Jody wants to say something.
Yeah, you can tell by because I'm moving my nose. I guess one of the things that sounds unusual on the recording of God's Own Child is that we have six voices. And almost always there's at least five going at once. There's a lead singer and at least four backups, sometimes five. And the trick is to not step on each other's parts because we were making it up as we went along. This is not written out or even terribly well rehearsed. I mean, we did rehearse, but you know, it was that morning. I don't remember how many takes we did. Not many, you know, two maybe. So I mean, hearing those six voices, each with a very different timbre. A different sound, and a lot of experience of singing with other people. I think that accounts for the success of it.
So let's hear Peter Rowan's song, God's Own Child, from the Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band new album, Legacy. And the guest singers on this track are Del McCoury, who will sing the second verse, and Ricky Skaggs. So here we go.
I am a child,
child of God, child of God, child of
God's own holy child, while wandering on,
while wandering
my life's soul journey. I have overcome many a strong temptation. I raise my voice to heaven high, and I praise,
I
pray. Oh, in my darkest hour, wandering in fiery realms, bound in chains, oh, the dark night of my soul.
vision of my Lord is pure.
Okay, that's Peter Rowan's song, God's Own Child, from the Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band new CD, Legacy. And the whole band's going to play for us some more in a couple of minutes, but that song is from the CD. So let's talk a little bit about bluegrass harmonies and that old, like, gospel style of harmony that you're doing on this track. What sets bluegrass harmonies apart? They're so distinctive. So what is there a certain configuration, certain set of intervals that are typically bluegrass harmony?
Yes, the typical is if you have one voice, you have your lead, right? And then if it, you add just one other voice, like Jody was singing with me on Across the Rolling Hills, that's considered the tenor part, just above the melody, and it has a lot of freedom to move around. But once you add the third part, which we refer to as the baritone part, which is traditionally below the melody, then you have a triad. You have the three notes forming this tonal cluster, which is so pleasing. And it gets a little more complicated as the tenor part begins to move up into the octave that the baritone part is singing. Then the baritone part will often jump over the melody. And we do
that a lot.
Give us a demonstration of that. Just, you know, do a verse of a song that would show what you're talking about.
Let's see.
Well, here's a good example of three-part harmonies, as sung in the early days of bluegrass by Bill Monroe, Lester Flatt, and Earl Scruggs.
Summertime is past and gone, and I'm on my way back home to see the only one I've ever loved. Now the moon is shining bright, it lights my pathway tonight, back to the only one I've ever loved.
Keith, he just crossed right up above Peter, between me and Peter, when I'm on my way back home.
That's very nice. Now, do you all have big enough ranges that you can change parts depending on what song?
Sure. You want to hear us? You want to hear us change parts on that one?
You want me to sing tenor this time? That would be good.
Okay.
You want to sing?
This
lead?
Might all.
I'll sing lead. Sure.
I'll sing the baritone. Okay.
Acoustic
okay.
Trash can. Yeah.
Here we go.
Summertime is past and gone, and I'm on my way back home to see the only one I ever loved. Now the moon is shining bright, it lights my pathway tonight, back to the only one I ever loved.
Very nice. It must be so hard on stage to sing close harmonies like that when the monitors are bad, which is probably so often the case.
Well, you know, we that's been a whole lifelong discovery and how to deal with that. And we owe a lot to our bass player, Paul Knight, because he'll set up the sound just the way we like it. And we sing over one microphone. So whether we have monitors or not is a much less of a concern than trying to have every microphone have its own crisp, clear monitor. Mm-hmm. And having one big central microphone gives us a focus.
So, now, Peter, you grew up around Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did you end up singing with Bill Monroe, who's famous from being from Kentucky? He's considered, you know, like the, or at least a father of bluegrass. So how did you hook up with him?
Well, Boston in the post-World War II years was a disembarkation place for soldiers coming back from Europe. And the Boston Naval Yard was a full-on active naval base. So the music coming out of Boston on the radio when I was a kid was all basically hillbilly music, bluegrass music, because so many of the soldiers and sailors were from the South. And as I was a kid, you know, my mother would allow me to listen to the radio when I, you know, had my so-called nap time. And I noticed right away that pop music was all about, come on, let's get together. And country music was like, woe is me, it's all gone now. You know? And then there was this other music called bluegrass that just didn't fit into anywhere. And this is pre-rock and roll. Rock and roll had not happened yet. My parents listened to, you know, everybody, Vaughn Monroe, and sang songs from South Pacific and stuff like that. But I found this little thing on the radio, and it was bluegrass. And there was a Saturday morning kids program called Bobby Benson and the B-Bar B-Riders. And the lead thing, the theme song was played on the banjo, and it just literally drove me nuts to hear that. I didn't know what it was. I went downstairs, and I got chopsticks and sticks from the yard and pots and pans and put them all around and started banging on those things because I thought that's what the banjo was a kind of like a xylophone or a gamelan or something. And as soon as I got to be about 14, I had my own little rock and roll band called the Cupids, and we'd go around and we'd play these things called sock hops. And
So I'm getting the impression that your early music, like the roots music in your life, was a combination of pre-rock and roll and bluegrass and country music.
Well, yeah, it was more of like just what was going on at the time. I learned how to square dance as a kid.
I did too,
yeah,
grade school.
Well, that was the thing. You had to go, right? You did it in school, and then Friday nights you'd have a square dance with a live band. Mostly college kids from, you know, Harvard University,
all
interested in folk
music. This is just dawning
music.
On me. I learned to, I mean, I was in Brooklyn.
Do you remember? Now remember
dance.
Back,
yes.
Terry.
I'd forgotten that.
Square dancing. It was part of the communist plot, wasn't it? There was a pinko thing behind all that. Get the people square dancing.
So you grow up with country and bluegrass music, among other things, in Boston. And how do you get to Kentucky and Bill Monroe?
All right, well, I didn't differentiate between musics until I had my little rock and roll band, the Cupids. And Bill Monroe came up to New England to play some shows and didn't have a band. And so he hired myself and the fiddler Tex Logan, banjo player Bill Keith, young fiddler Gene Loewinger, and Everett Allen Lilly, the son of Everett Lilly of the Lilly Brothers. And we performed about 3 or 4 shows with Bill Monroe up through the New England area. We played at some colleges and a big concert at Jordan Hall in Boston. And Bill looked at me after I'd been working with him those few days. He said, you ought to come to Nashville. I can hip you.
Bill Monroe said, I can hip you?
I can hip you.
That's not the language I'd expect him to use. Okay.
Well, you know, help. Help is...
Oh, help you. I thought he was talking like a hipster talk.
Well, I think see, that's the thing.
Talking jive, yeah.
I thought that's what he was saying was... I couldn't tell whether it was help or hip, you know? But that's how he pronounced it, was hip. Hip
right.
You.
Got it. So that's how you started to play with him. He hipped you.
Yeah, he hipped me. He hipped me and hipped me, and I went to Nashville and started hanging out, you know, a long process of being assimilated into the scene and the band.
Oh, assimilated, the perfect word, because I was wondering what was it like to go from Boston, where you were hearing, you know, bluegrass on the radio, to Kentucky, which is, particularly back then, was like a really different culture for you, and suddenly you're representing that culture in the band.
Well, going from New England to the Grand Ole Opry is more like it. It was the South. It was Nashville, Tennessee in 1963 and 64. The first thing that happened was to play with Bill Monroe, you're on the Grand Ole Opry. You know, I was on the Opry. And people began writing in. And the week after I sang my first solo on the Opry, Bill came up to me backstage when I got there. And it's so exciting, Terry. I can't tell you how exciting that was. Minnie Pearl and Roy Acuff and Porter Wagoner and all the great old-time pickers. And Bill sort of took me aside and said, you know, Pete, we've had a lot of phone calls and a lot of letters, and people, they like you, the way you sing. And he said, that's a good thing. And I said, well, thank you. And he said, and they say you sound like me. And he said, that's not a good thing.
Wait, was it not a good thing because people would confuse you or because you risked showing him up?
No, Bill Monroe was extremely proprietary about what he felt he had created.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hipping me and hepping me. And he would stand behind me on stage whenever I would like fall into like a bluegrass kind of cliche type of voice, you know, like I was trying to sing bluegrass. And he would yell at me.
On stage?
Sing it like on stage. He would stand behind me and chop that mandolin. He would yell right at the back of my head. He'd say, he'd say, sing it like Pete Roan, or Pete Roans. He would say, sing it like Pete Roan, sing it like it's, tell him it's Pete Roan singing.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Let's get back to our in-studio performance and interview with the Peter Roan Bluegrass Band. The band features Peter Roan on guitar and vocals, Jody Stecker mandolin, Keith Little banjo, and Paul Knight bass. They all join in on the harmonies. The band has a new album called Legacy. At the beginning of Peter Roan's career, he played with the father of bluegrass, Bill Monroe. Roan was the lead singer and guitarist for Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys from 1964 to 67. Here's Roan singing with Bill Monroe from a 1965 live recording. It's a song they co-wrote called The Walls of Time.
The wind is blowing across the mountain.
Did you get along well with Bill Monroe while you were with the band, which was, what, a year that you were with the band?
I was with them for 2.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, we got along very well on a kind of a spiritual, musical level. But there were a lot of things about Bill that were authoritarian in that he had paid his dues and he knew exactly what he wanted in his music. And there's a lot of joking among former bluegrass boys of kind of like this sense where Bill finally enters your mind and you are an extension of his vision. and so there was all of that. We got along really well. Bill was a very kind, deep man, but he had been through some hard times and he had struggled.
What did he teach you about singing or about harmony or guitar?
Well, on the guitar, he taught me to make the rhythm stroke, a full stroke, instead of playing like this, but to play like. To really bring the tone out of the guitar. And as far as vocalization, you know, he would insist that you virtually rub shoulders with him around the microphone and like rub your voices together like two pieces of wood and make a spark fly out of it, you know. That was a friction. He always would say that bluegrass is about one person doing something really great. Then you've got to step in behind that person and then do something that you can do better. In other words, there was always a sense of competition and friction. He did say one to sing with a full breath. And when you finish the line, you should give the last syllable of the last word the same power that you gave the first syllable of the first word.
That sounds really good. It sounds like really good advice. So
yeah.
I'm going to ask you all to do a song that Bill Monroe wrote, but that was also recorded by Elvis. And I think this is a song that bridges all of your the music that you liked when you were a teenager, because you loved bluegrass, you loved Elvis, so you must have known both of these versions, both of their versions.
Well, I heard Elvis's version first, you know, and while I was playing with Bill Monroe, an interviewer asked him if you know, bluegrass is always held to be like the sacred purity of, you know, country music and roots, and it is for sure, but Bill fielded the question of whether he thought Elvis had ruined his, you know, bluegrass. This was from a journalist who was holding Bill in very high esteem, and he said, "Mr. Monroe, do you think Elvis ruined your song Blue Moon of Kentucky? And Bill said, no, sir. Them were powerful checks.
Yeah, right answer. Okay, so before you perform this, tell us who's singing what, like who's doing what on the harmonies.
Well, Peter, am going to sing this solo as Bill Monroe sang it. In fact, this is good, Terry. This is the arrangement Bill Monroe came up with after Elvis made a hit of his song Blue Moon of Kentucky. Bill had recorded it early on as a waltz, with three-quarter time all the way through. But once Elvis had made a hit of it in 4/4 time, Bill, in his, you know, his search for ever bringing the music forward, as he might say, added a fast section to the song. So what you'll hear is Jody Stecker on mandolin, Paul Knight on bass, and Keith Little on banjo. And we're going to play Blue Moon of Kentucky halfway through according to how it was originally written. And the second half will be Bill Monroe's arrangement of Blue Moon of Kentucky as he used to play it based on Elvis's hit version.
Very good.
Here we go. Said goodbye.
So, Peter, when did you know it was time to leave Bill Monroe?
You know, I asked him one day, what's the hardest part about... I have to say that, you know, most people always respected Bill Monroe's silence, and I did too. But I figured after 6 hours of driving that bus, I had the right to ask him some questions after my shift. So about 2 o'clock in the morning is when I would talk with Bill, and he'd take out his mandolin, and he'd play all this stuff. And I really wanted him to know that I wasn't prying into his world, and you know that I was sincerely looking for the heart of the music to carry it forward. And I asked him one. He used to play examples of rhythms and things that he picked up in New Orleans and places like that when he was out there trying to, you know, trying to make bluegrass, trying to invent bluegrass. He looked at it as a thing that he did, that he invented it. He said, I've had to keep as much out of bluegrass as I've put in it. And I said, what was the hardest part? What's the most difficult part of going all these years? At that point, he was 25 years on the Grand Ole Opry and had been on the road 15 years before that. And he said the hardest part is teaching bluegrass music to people and then having them leave. So, I mean, I knew that if I had to go, I had to go, and it was going to be difficult. This was during the Vietnam War, and my views and my music were becoming more about what my generation was thinking about. And although I did think that bluegrass was about as psychedelic as you could get, I needed to go. I needed to be with kids my own age, you know. And playing with Bill Monroe, most of the audiences were in their 50s and 60s. And they were great people. They were great people. He said he used to, I asked him why he liked to wear a coat and tie and everything like that. He said that when you play for farmers, they know how much you respect them and the music that you're bringing to them when you dress up like that. He said the audience would come there in clean white shirts and overalls, and you stand up on stage in your clean white shirt and your tie and your hat, and you give them something special, you know. It's not church, it's beyond, you know. It's having a spiritual experience with the audience that's non, you know, quote, religious. It's not Sunday morning. You bring Sunday morning to Saturday night, sing the gospel tunes and everything like that. Well, it came time for me to leave, and I wanted to create music of my own, really. You know, I stood next to that fire for almost 3 years, and I was well singed and well cooked when I left. And it wasn't so much a career move for me to leave Bill Monroe. It was just a sense of I'm standing in the shadow of the man. I wanted to figure out what I could do. So
I'm thinking about how many different cultural switches you went on when you were young, because, you know, you start out in Boston, then you go to Kentucky, you perform with Bill Monroe and the Grand Ole Opry, you leave Bill Monroe, you start with David Grisman, a band called Earth Opera, and you open for the Doors at shows. I'm thinking, the Doors audience and Bill Monroe's audience are probably as different as you're going to get in the 1960s. And then after that, you play, you co-found a band. Did you co-found Alden in the White? You did, right?
Yeah, but me, yeah, and Grisman were standing down on the sand dunes of Stinson Beach. He said, you know, Garcia lives up the hill.
Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
So he's a member of the band, too. So you get into the whole kind of Jerry Garcia San Francisco scene via Alden in the Way, a band in which violin player...
Vassar
Clemens, Vassar I just blanked Clemens. Down on his name, was in, yeah. So just talk a little bit about that cultural shift, going from bluegrass with Bill Monroe to playing with Jerry Garcia to opening for the Doors, you know, to being in back in youth culture and also in a kind of psychedelic part of youth culture.
I really didn't think that much about it. It was an opportunity at the time to play a lot of music. When I think back about it, Olden in the Way out in San Francisco with Jerry Garcia, Dave Grisman, Vassar Clemens, and John Kahn, that was only 5 years after I left Bill Monroe. But I had already been through a lot of musical changes. And to come back to bluegrass 5 years later was just as natural as anything could be. You know, there's a sense of, people were always demanding authenticity in the folk music world and bluegrass music world back then. Bluegrass music had its own authenticity in its world. But as it began to come out of that world, and you still had people like Carter and Ralph Stanley, Bill Monroe, it was like, okay, there's the touchstone. These guys are there at the beginning. You know, so where does that leave me? Coming back to Olden in the Way, I suddenly found that, hey, I was there too. You know, it was like I actually learned something. You know, it wasn't because I played music as an outsider that I wasn't valid. When Olden and the Way began to play together, we were just having fun. We played more off stage than we played on stage. It was just a jam session we had. And then we started playing for the people, and really thanks to Jerry Garcia's huge audience with the Grateful Dead, suddenly people began to discover bluegrass.
So you wrote a couple of songs for Olden in the Way that became, you know, pretty well known. One of them is called Panama Red. And the other, which I'm going to ask you all to perform, is Midnight Moonlight. And by way of introduction, Peter, what's the story behind the song?
Well, before Olden in the Way, I was in a band. I was in two bands when I left Bill Monroe. One was Earth Opera with Dave Grisman, and then another one was called Sea Train. And it included the fiddle player, Richard Green, who had been a bluegrass boy with me, with Bill Monroe. So here are these two bluegrass boys in a rock and roll band. And when I left Sea Train, I left the band. I gave my notice in San Antonio, Texas. And I still had a few shows to play, but I gave myself a week in San Antonio. San Antonio had not boomed since the cattle days in the 1880s. And it was a fantastic place, a border town of the highest degree, with farmacias, you know, which would have a whole herbology, drawers of herbs, and you know, very old ways, but sort of a sense of magic was in the air. And I wrote the song Midnight Moonlight as my first song of leaving Sea Train. It would have been a song Sea Train could have done easily, but they weren't of that mind. So I was thinking bluegrass, and I was thinking of the chord changes that would be fun for folks to play in bluegrass. And Midnight Moonlight is the description of being in San Antonio for those 5 days.
Okay, so this is going to be performed for us in the studio by Peter Rowan on guitar and vocals, Keith Little banjo, Paul Knight bass, Jody Stecker mandolin, and is everyone singing harmonies on this?
The harmonies will be sung by, now who's singing tenor on this one?
I'm singing tenor.
Okay, Keith. So on this one, Keith Little is singing tenor, Jody's singing the baritone.
Okay.
All right, so Midnight Moonlight.
If you ever feel lonesome and you're down in San Antonio, beg, steal, or borrow two nickels or a dime and call me on the phone. I will meet you at Alamo Mission. We can say our prayers. The Holy Ghost and the Virgin Mother will heal us as we kneel there. In the moonlight, in the midnight, in the moonlight, midnight, moonlight. In the midnight, in the moonlight, midnight,
the Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band performing Midnight Moonlight for us. The band features Peter Rowan on guitar and vocals, Jody Stecker mandolin, Keith Little banjo, and Paul Knight bass. Their new album is called Legacy. More of their in-studio performance after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our in-studio performance with the Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band. The band members are Peter Rowan, Jody Stecker, Keith Little, and Paul Knight. In 1973, Peter Rowan co-founded the bluegrass band Olden in the Way that featured Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead on banjo. I asked Rowan how Garcia compared with his popular image.
Yeah, you know, he was a real person. He gave himself to the music. He gave himself to his audience, and he became a big blank screen upon which people could project anything. And that's one of the sacrifices of being a performer. And he loved to play, so he'd never turn down an opportunity to play music. If it was going to be music, he'd do that over anything. And I think, you know, I think it's just it's kind of dangerous to I mean, he was so open and so giving, and that's what turned the crowd on to him, essentially. But then the crowd got distracted. The crowd started thinking that it was all about the psychedelia and drugs and things like that. And Jerry would never deny it. I mean, he would never deny anything. I ever heard him. Never heard him say no to about anything. The only thing I ever heard him say was about a kind of a cutting through. We finished a show one evening and came off the stage, and some members of the band started quibbling about how if we had done it this way or done it that way, and we could have played it better. And this, and Garcia, just like a Zen master, said, "No thoughts." The dressing room was very quiet. Mm-hmm. He just didn't want a whole lot of conceptualizing over something that was fleeting. And I think that permeated his worldview.
Well, I'd love to close with another song. And thank you so much for performing for us. It's been really a treat. I really appreciate it. Thank you all.
Thank you, Terry. We love you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
It's been our pleasure.
You're welcome. And what great questions.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. You were great. It would be nice to hear something... those beautiful harmonies that you sing together.
Well, let's take it all the way back to one of the first songs Bill Monroe recorded. There were two recordings that I know of. Jody may be able to confirm this. There were two recorded versions of the song that I know of as a kid starting to learn the music, and one was by Hootie Ledbetter, better known as Lead Belly, a song we called Black Girl. And then there was this song by Bill Monroe. To my knowledge, I don't know if there was another version of it.
Oh, yeah.
There were quite some old ones.
But they're all variants of the same thing, for sure.
So this is how we learned the song, down through the music of Bill Monroe. Great old-timer. I'll play it for you now, called In the Pines.
Train I ever saw went down that Georgia line. The engine passed at 6 o'clock and the cab passed by at 9. In the pines, where the sun never shines, and we shiver when the cold wind blows. Shiver when the cold wind blows.
Our thanks to the members of the Peter Rowan Bluegrass Band. Their new album is called Legacy. You can hear three tracks from the album on our website, freshair.npr.org. The band spoke to us from and performed at the studio of Minnesota Public Radio. Our thanks to NPR engineer Craig Thorson for mixing the concert. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joan Tuohy-Westman, Sam Brigger, John Myers, John Sheehan, Lauren Krenzel, and Heidi Simon. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.